Let's go to our Friday panel. We'll meet them in a minute, but let's remind ourselves of some of the main news stories of the past 7 days, first of all.
I had to express my opinion that this government was not doing enough in relation to many issues, not only in health, but in housing as well. And I had made suggestions in relation to housing that there should be a rural relocation scheme. That was a plan that was not accepted.
Where Gardaí are carrying arms and wearing vests, and people who are living in houses of bulletproof glass, you know, you can be in the wrong place at the wrong time. What will happen to that taxi driver on the Bridge of Peace?
Well, the average age of forced use of, say, weed, for example, is 12. So most people start dipping around alcohol, weed, around 12 years of age, 13 years of age. And then they start probably hitting different types of drugs in their late teens, harder drugs like heroin, cocaine, etc.
This represents a barbaric watershed in terms of crime in our country and the level of depravity which people are prepared to descend to. It's a very evil atrocity. And it has to become a number one priority.
My understanding is that the City Council and Waterways Ireland did check the tents before removing them, but obviously something went wrong here, and I think it's reasonable that the Lord Mayor of Dublin, who is politically accountable for Dublin City Council, should also make a statement. I'm sure he'd be willing to do that.
It is very difficult to convince us or anybody else that Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael will do anything differently than they have done before.
A bit unusual. It's kind of a day off for everyone, I reckon. But look, if it's Saturday, I think they still come out.
One voter's reaction there to news. We're voting on a Saturday. Before that, you heard from outgoing Clare Independent TD Michael Harty. People of Drogheda reflecting fear in the town, and a local addiction councillor by the name of Pio Smith. That's in the wake of the killing of Cian Mulready Woods. Micheál Martin reacted to that. Leo Varadkar gave his reaction to the incident in which a homeless man received life-changing injuries when his tent was cleared away with him inside of it. And you heard Mary Lou MacDonald as well assessing both of the other two parties, the two bigger parties in the Dáil. Is at present, or was up until it was dissolved, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. She was slamming them ahead of the election in a few weeks' time. To discuss the last few days in news, I'm joined in studio this morning by Brian Meaney, former Green Party and Fianna Fáil councillor, member of Clare County Council, former general election candidate as well. Gabriella Hanrahan, community liaison officer with the University of Limerick, and Geraldine Gregan. She's based in Ennis and she's part of the local Fine Gael organisation. Good morning to you all.
Good morning,
Gavin. For joining us this morning. Brian Meaney, what's this time like for an election candidate?
It's horrible.
Really?
Absolutely. I think it was Cicero, the Roman senator in about AD 70, said that politicians aren't born, they're excreted. No, I'm not.
That's a great line.
I'm not being disrespectful to politicians, yeah. But they come from within us. And we are now approaching the time of the great excretion. It happens every 5 years. And I have to say, I did try on a number of occasions to be excreted. I was excreted twice successfully and a number of times unsuccessfully. But I'm looking at the political, the background in which this this election is taking place. The situations is no posters. People, you're vilified if you put up a poster. Mm. No canvases, signs on every second door. No election literature.
Yes.
And then if they choose to open it, there is a 70% to 80% chance of abuse. It is not. Politicians will tell you, I love going on the door and I love knocking on the door. It's a horror time. And at this time of year, makes it even worse because it's dark, it's cold, and it's wet. And politics, nationally and internationally, has received a very bad press. It's not standing in good stead with the people. And we are undermining the means by which we run our democracy, and it's not good. And I don't like the place in which politics is entered into at the moment.
I think it could be reflective of broader society potentially. Hank, can I go back to one point you said there? 70% of those who actually answer the door will abuse you.
Well, really? that was my experience. No, but you see, I was standing for a party that was well outside the normal. I was stunned when I heard Councillor Garvey, who had her launch there, I think last week, in the Old Ground, when I heard that the chair of the IFA was in attendance at the launch, Willie Hanrahan.
Yes, yeah.
And because my experience...
Times have changed.
When I tell you I had dogs set on me knocking on farmers' doors, I had. So times are changing. It's an indicator of times are changing. Now, I possibly painted a very pessimistic picture, and I don't mean to do that.
That's fair enough. No, but it's your view. I'm not going to dispute it this morning.
I wish every one of the candidates that are standing the best of luck.
Okay. Have you ever done much canvassing?
Yes, I have been out and about in the last few days.
Are you going to tell Brian that you love it?
Well, it's great when people engage, you know, and I perfectly understand where Brian's coming from. We do get signs now, no canvassers,
no literature,
that sort of thing. In actual fact, what we say now when people answer the door, thank you for speaking to us, you know, we're so grateful, you know. And I have found, one stands out in the last few days, a lady said to me, thanks for calling to see us, you know.
Really?
Yes, and she was in her early 30s, I'd say. So some people have given up on door-to-door, but you shouldn't, you know. She was delighted to engage in conversation, you know. So it would be lovely if that were more widespread, because it's important that people engage.
Yeah,
you know,
I think.
Just on the figure, 1919 election, 80% of the population voted. So, you know,
I think it might.
There were different times or whatever, but you know, it's a very important. Okay. I think, particularly young people, to engage and be aware of an election.
Absolutely, you know? And whether they're doing it or not is potentially into the question, but there is still 3 weeks to come. Yeah. Take me anywhere you want to go in the election campaign over the last 3 days. What jumps out to you so far?
I actually, I really concur with what Brian said, because I'm feeling that in myself. I'm feeling
what exactly, sorry?
Disillusioned around the entire political system and democracy itself. I think even our vote doesn't really give us any authority in terms of, I would never not vote, but even in voting, what we get is not what I would have voted for, or in terms of the type of country and democracy and culture that I want to live in. It's not happening for me.
But I am
desperately upset at the homeless situation in this country. I'm just desperately upset about that. And the problem with that is I'm desperately upset because I can't see any of the political parties solving it. Because if it could be solved, why haven't they solved it up to now? And that gives me, you know, very little confidence in the political system to solve the major issues that we've got to deal with in this country. Like, there can't be anybody absolutely upset about the health service. Now, there's great outcomes from the health service in some instances, but in actual fact, the stories that we hear, we shouldn't be hearing those stories. We shouldn't be hearing about hundreds of people on trolleys in 2020. We just shouldn't. And there has been minister after minister after minister paid to solve that, and it hasn't been solved. So it's actually got worse.
So are you saying, and I'm not asking who you'll vote for, but are you saying that when you vote...
I don't know who
that's
voting,
okay,
to be honest, Gavin.
But do you feel that when you cast your ballot in 3 weeks' time, that you will probably be voting for what you regard as the least worst option?
It's not the... I don't think the least worst, because I absolutely believe in the whole notion of democracy, and I absolutely think people are unbelievably brave to go into politics, because I think it's a really nasty business and you get nothing but dogs abuse, you know, for it. But I think my issue is, who is going to solve the issues, because they haven't been solved up to now? Like, we have, our economy is going really well, we have huge employment now, and yet the major issues in terms of our social services are not working. And I really am not hopeful that can be solved by the political system the way it is, because even in the last few days, you asked me about the last few days of canvassing, I am tired of politicians having a go at each other on radio. You said that, I said this, he said that, you said that. You, like, I was listening to it yesterday evening on the way home and I thought, oh, for God's sake, if you're all there to support the people, why can't you come together and solve the issues together? Why do you have to be playing one off another? Everyone that goes into politics says they're going in to make the country better and to make our lives better. So if that's the case, how can they not find a common approach to solving the issues instead of scoring points?
What do you make of that, Geraldine?
Interesting about solving issues. We were at rock bottom in 2008. Now, you know my background, I am Fine Gael anyway, yeah. But we're at rock bottom. We're no longer, from an economic point of view, at rock bottom.
But on the time, it takes time
to correct services. There's much talk about, say, you know, creche facilities and all the rest. I came to Clare in 93 with two babies and with the intention of working. There was one creche in Ennis. Like, we're a changing society. Way more married women work now. And it's coming right. But because we're such a growing, changing society.
And what Gabriella said with regards to health and homelessness, are you getting...
Yes, I will agree with you.
I'm sure people have brought that up with you on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will agree with you. The health service, there are issues. There are shocking issues inside in the accident emergency Limerick, yes. But if you can get upstairs, like, there are good stories as well, and we never hear about the good stories. Like, a friend of mine picked up like that with breast cancer and treated within a week of being diagnosed. Perfect, you know. One example. That's one example.
Well, when you see
my husband is type 2 diabetic, and he's great support, absolutely wonderful support. You know, they're two examples. Stints, lots and lots of heart situations corrected.
Yeah, but there's also lots of surgeries that have been cancelled. There are tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people in this region on waiting lists. So
I totally agree with you. There's more work to be done. Yeah. You know,
why do we think that that's great that we have those things? That's normal. Like, in a normal society that we pay our tax, that should be normalised. Mm. That shouldn't be that's great that that's done. Why should it be great?
Like, absolutely.
With women being back to work, that should have been done 100 years ago. Like, those things, they can't be presented as something that's been great advancements, because they should be normal anyway. Mm. Like, I don't think we should, you know.
Isn't it wonderful to see so many women working now, and the opportunities are there, and that there is work available? You know, it's just that we don't live in a perfect world. But the question was, are there improvements? And my answer is, there are. You know,
Brian, I wanted to touch on and go back on something that Gabriella said about a disillusionment with the political system, or at least, in particular, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael as the two parties that have been in government forever and a day in this country.
That is,
I'm hearing it a lot.
That has existed. We have
in the last week.
We have a very peculiar political system here in this country, where you have two centre parties that make up the main block of that take the majority of the Irish votes, and it's then to the horse trading that takes place after the election as to who then is going to provide the colour. So they're like the beige, and then you have People Before Profit, Greens, Labour,
Social Democrats, Independence.
They will then add the colour, and we're never entirely sure what colour we're going to be putting on the wall. And it is, I share Gabrielle's exasperation, and that exasperation is out there. And it's the one thing that I've picked up so far, even in a couple of days in, we haven't even seen the manifestos of the political party. But the one thing I picked up, and when I'm out and about, you know, one person says something, okay, two people say it. Three people, it is statistically significant. Mm. And three people unrelated to each other have said this. They wish they had the British electoral system. Now, bear with me.
Okay.
Because I know our PRS-TV is superior. They have first past. But they look at Boris Johnson's 80-seat majority. They know the colour that their paint, that their soup is going to be. And a number of people have said that to me. It may not be reflected in the actual vote if the vote happens, but can I just provide Ray Hope to Kay? Mm. There are people who know how to run the country.
Are you saying
But they're too busy
commenting on the journal.ie are driving taxis in Dublin. They know it all. You know, so we have a political system where we have the two large parties suck up the main votes.
Perhaps we should give an overall majority to the party that has absolute experience with Brexit now, so that we could match Boris Johnson.
That's a very interesting point, because we have no experience of Brexit. We have absolutely zero experience. And that's why I was really shocked that the election was called. We don't know where we're going at the end of January. We have absolutely no idea where we're going. And I was really amazed that the election was called, but it was called for political reasons because there was challenges.
The numbers weren't there.
Correct.
It's a numbers
exactly.
game. It was caused because there was a vote of confidence to be called in Simon Harris and... Simplify.
Yeah, again, Gabriel, you make a very, important point. We need to know where we're going at the end of January, and know better people to manage the going forward.
Okay.
The people
I'm not going to allow campaigning on the airwaves, as you can understand. Right, we're going to have a chat. We're going to keep it level. Okay, I want to talk about a couple of the issues that have come up this week, and I think both the injuries that we discussed in the first hour of the programme with Paul Peter McVerry to that homeless man in Dublin, but also Brian Meaney, the brutal and savage murder of that teenager in Drogheda has horrified people.
When you hear a radio report and you just stop in your tracks and you take a deep breath and you go, this is new and significant, and you get so exasperated with the drugs issue and the criminality attached to it, you often think, should the army be brought in? Would that be an overreaction? Because the state has the power to deal with these individuals who deem it necessary to murder a child and dismember the child and spread its body parts all over.
And do it in a way that was sending a message according... And this is narcos. For people who've seen it, this is Pablo Escobar.
Put the stuff up on social media.
Yeah.
To make it visible. I'm told there is... I don't even want to... I switch away from the thing. But I do believe in the power of the state, and I do believe it's necessary for the state to exercise that power, and it has done so in the past. The Veronica Gear, what they did in Limerick, what they did with the general. And it has gone past the point where the state has to meet like with like. And... if it's a time for the armed forces to come in and support the state in ensuring that that law is applied, law and order is maintained, I think it's necessary to do that.
I can't think of anything quite
as horrific.
Horrific is the term. Yeah, I know we have had things like this, unfortunately, but just the callousness of it, the brutality.
Well, I was going to work the other morning, driving into work, and it was about 7 o'clock, and it came on the news. Honest to God, I actually squealed in the car. I went, my God, like, it really...
And that report is...
deeply. Yeah. Because all I could think of was the notion that a child would be treated the way that young man... I know he'd have passed the crater, you know, and obviously, he's involved in...
So that's according to reports,
The poor boy. But it was... do you know what really frightened me was that the people that did it thought they could do it.
And get away with it.
And I think that shows a level of absolute disregard for the society that we live in. And I think that's what's really, really upsetting about this, that we know now that living amongst us are people that disregard hugely the rules of society. And that is the most frightening thing. And because it's so frightening and it's got to that level, I absolutely agree with Brian. I mean, the response from government has been really, really poor on this.
Just bad timing with the election.
I don't care. Yeah, come out and make a definite statement that from here on in, that this is what we're going to do, this is our plan, and we are not going to stop until we bring these people to justice. We need to hear that as a society so we all feel safe. We need to hear it. I mean, that's another element of the political system, not to have that emotional response to something like this when citizens themselves are experiencing that emotion around it.
Your own thoughts,
Geraldine? I asked the question, should we legalise drugs, you know, even on an experimental basis?
In other words, to take them out of the hands of criminals.
There's terrible greed, and it's all built on the drug trade, you know. Now, the only thing, Limerick became a success, you know, that awfulness in Limerick a few years ago.
There's still issues there, you know, and there's always going to be issues in places. Yeah. I don't mean that.
But it must be horrific to be around the Drogheda Dundalk area at the moment.
Yeah. You had an innocent man shot in Drogheda this week.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It's on the Bridge of Peace, ironically, you know.
It's crossed the line entirely in brutality, you know.
And it's very, very sad. A town that's dissimilar to Ennis. It's very relatable. You know, this isn't a big city. This isn't.
It just shows how easily things can catch.
I mean, they just had their All Ireland flag there. You know, it's like like we've so many things in common with the town.
Old town centre, a beautiful town as well.
To think that what. I think that's what's so frightening about it, that we can all relate to the town itself, and that could happen in it, and that means it could happen in any other part of the country, and we need to be reassured that the full force of the law will be brought.
Well, it has to be, because that represents an escalation of the brutality. So therefore the state will have to meet that escalation head on.
We have seen the Gardaí come out and speak. That's the one point they'll make in terms of being very forthcoming. And hopefully, we don't know what's going to happen in terms of the investigation, but hopefully that those responsible are brought to justice. And I wanted to touch on a couple of different issues before we finish this morning. And Geraldine Gregan, to yourself, first of all, we talked rural decline at Bishop Fintan Monaghan in the programme yesterday in the wake of the closure of the National School in Cross. And a stark enough warning he issued as well, that more schools could follow. Is this, unfortunately, much as we may not like it, the way of the world, that young families are moving away from smaller villages in particular, but also as an extension from bigger villages and towns as well? Or does something need to be done?
Yes, Cross School you're referring to.
Yes.
And yes, of course, it's sad to see any national school closing down. In actual fact, I come from a parish down in East Cork, had three schools and one closed years ago, and it started to debate, are we dying on our feet in the local parish? I can assure you they're not. They turned the school into a community centre, and it's thriving, and they have a brilliant drama group working out of there now. And obviously I was thinking of this subject matter before coming in this morning, and I've been out at plays in Knockara. I've been in Dunbeg at the Drama Festival. I've been out in Kilfenora, fantastic community centre in Coora Clare. I watched Uber on television the other night in Newmarket and Fergus, and the vibrancy of work done. Once there's a spirit, even if it is a small group. Now, the landscape is changing, you know. Younger families are moving in more in towards towns. But that has been happening since my youth, you know. So there's still, you know, hope and beauty in living in rural Ireland. And that's what we've keep, you know.
Okay, so do you think, when we talk, if I was to talk about rural decline now, are you telling me that there isn't rural decline, that there's less than people are saying, or is it?
Decline is a negative word, you see.
Yeah.
You know.
But that's how people see it, or a lot of people see it, certainly.
There are younger families are moving in towards a town, but there's still a vibrancy. We're still a good rural area, you know, that it probably comes more to life in the summer now with the tourist trade and that. But yes, there's still a sadness when you see a national school closing. Of course there is.
I'm not taking away from that, but you're saying that there's a second side to the coin.
Not to lose heart is what I'm saying. Okay. And there is work being done, like fantastic communities around the place, to keep rural Ireland alive. And that's what we must concentrate on, be positive about, you know.
Our national school system, I think, set off about 1831 at the introduction of the Stirling Act, an act of the British Parliament. And by the 1850s, there was a school in every parish. I'd say people listening to this radio session possibly know of schools which closed in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
I know of Mahara, Lisroe, Drumbanov. I can name list a few. And just people, they're now houses. People are living in them. Mm-hmm. So this is something that has been happening for the last 100 years. The schools were set up. There was an awful lot of them. And your population change and population shift as a consequence. Schools begin to close. And that has been happening. It has been quite significant change in the last 20 years. And it's not just schools. And it's not just West Clare.
No, no, absolutely not.
O'Callaghan's Mills, a town I go to quite often. And there's, I can say the word, I think, I don't mean to offend people, O'Callaghan's Mills, my uncle lives there. Dereliction, apparent quite clearly. I did a job on contract for Guinness there a couple of years ago. And I travelled all over Munster. The town of Brosna, County Kerry, I was shocked at. The town of Ardea, I had this notion of Ardea as being a special place where this wonderful chalice was bought. I had this, you know, this. And again, dereliction. It is happening. It is real.
But is it any different from before?
It's a gradual change. Do I see any politician or any policy going to change that? I don't. Mm. I think because it seems to be a natural sociological cycle. But we're not setting up anything to break that cycle. People are moving to the large towns just because, or the large.
That brings me to the point that I often make in these discussions. There's an awful lot of people who want to leave rural Ireland, who want to go to towns and to cities.
Well,
because they see
the Greens, and I remember many years ago having to go back to a discussion on rural housing back in Kilkee, set up by the
Jim Connolly.
Jim Connolly,
yes.
Yeah. I remember we weren't even in government at the time. I went back to represent the Greens, and Jim Connolly was, you know, asking why is there such rural decline, and the various political parties set out their stalls. And in fact, there were the parties that presided over this decline since the 1950s, 1960s. Mm. And I stood up and I said, and I was literally regurgitating what our policy was. The policy was that rural decline was somewhat necessary because we have a very dispersed population system where you have isolated houses, one-off houses in the country, and having to travel. And it is quite, it's not sustainable. That model of population is not sustainable. Well, I was, again.
They loved you first.
Wrongly abused for only doing what I wanted to do, but while the others told them what they wanted to hear. So that's the most important thing. Tell them what they want to hear and you'll be happy. So, which is
probably a massive problem. I start to see why you might have been abused at the doorstep.
Yeah, but that did happen. It did happen. And but we're not squaring up to the real reasons, as to the real proposals to tackle rural decline. We went for the model of dispersed rural housing. If you go into France, you don't see once-off houses in the countryside. Yeah. You see them in hamlets.
That's right.
Far more sustainable. It is just the nature of the way we have planned. Okay. Sorry, Gabrielle.
No, Gabrielle.
Oh, no. A very interesting conversation, Brian. I completely agree around that. It's not sustainable in terms of one-off housing. I live in a one-off house myself. But I think that's got to do with our culture and our sociological pointers as well, insofar as we build on our land, and you know, and land is hugely important. Like the field is absolutely an absolute image of.
No one watches the field and says the main character is an idiot.
It's hugely around that.
We all get it. Yeah.
Hugely, and we're never going to give up that. So we're always going to have to deal with the issue of that's around that. Yeah. You know, because we are not going to change. Our culture in relation to that. So it's about supporting.
We want the one-off house, but we want it close to the urban centre.
And we want everything,
we want our space and our land.
Yes, we do,
We're not hard to please at all. Okay, I'm going to ask you all to be really, really quick on this one. But we were talking about it earlier, we've gotten a reaction from our listeners. You saw the farmers' protest on the M50 last night. Was it counterproductive? Did it go too far?
we kind of forget things very quickly. You know,
I don't know. Would you forget if you were stuck behind them on the M50 last night?
But like, what impact does it? Like, what?
As long as they protesting away in Dublin, I don't care.
Yeah, you know what I mean. I don't like. What's going to be? How is it going to impact in terms of the protest itself? Because they've protested now.
Well, the minister said recently that farmers need urban people to be their friends. Ooh. That they need the support of the cities, effectively.
I think, sorry, can I just finish? In terms of, they need the support, but actually urban cities need farmers. So if they're not looking after our land and if they're not producing what we need in terms of food, you know, the relationship is symbiotic, you know.
I actually think there's a great response to it from the people of Dublin. Mm. You know, they were quite understanding. Years ago, I think the rural-urban divide was way wider, you know, that it's probably because so many rural people have moved into Dublin, you know, they're just last generation or whatever, you know.
Last night's a storm in a teacup that'll blow over there.
Yeah, there are negotiations going on. There are massive tractors there.
That's been said an awful lot this morning as well. You're not too... This will blow away in your view?
I do think they've somewhat overstepped the mark in that I did hear on one of your rival radio stations, chat shows, a farmer really struggling to justify the actions they are taking because the negotiations underway, the retailers have come involved, the injunctions have been lifted. He couldn't pin down exactly why they were protesting. Mm. Maybe he could have said something that they were there to make the mark and to show that, you know, they're still ready
But there isn't unity, you see, within the movement.
There never is unity.
No, there never is.
I was in Dublin Monday at work and it was actually the last farmers' protest and I was coming off the Lewis and there was a conversation going on between three farmers and one of them was on the phone and he was saying, I don't know what the hell that fellow was doing, why the minister came down to meet him anyway, and we all here. And it was like, I went, oh my God, like, I'm front seat to, you know,
you're getting the difficulties the inside track. I'm going to leave it there. And I'm going to thank you all for coming into us this morning, Gabriella Hanrahan and Geraldine Gregan and Brian Meaney. Much appreciated.